Hello and welcome. I'm so glad you've joined me for today's episode because we're diving into one of the most intellectually rich and genuinely fascinating topics in your A-level religious studies course, Islam and society. Whether you're sitting AQA Component 2A or just want to really get to grips with how Islamic theology engages with the modern world, this episode is for you. We're going to cover the big ideas, jihad, gender, sharia, pluralism, and secularization, and I'll be giving you the exact kinds of arguments and scholar references that examiners are looking for. Remember, in this paper, AO2, that's your critical evaluation and argument, carries 60% of your marks. So it's not enough to describe what Muslims believe. You need to argue, weigh up, and reach a sustained conclusion. Keep that in mind throughout everything we discuss today.
Right, let's get into it.
Let's start with jihad, because it's probably the most misunderstood concept in the entire specification, and that misunderstanding is actually something examiners want you to address head on. The Arabic word jihad simply means struggle or striving. It does not mean holy war. That's a crucial distinction. Examiners will credit candidates who make this clear from the outset. Classical Islamic scholarship distinguishes between two forms. Al-jihad al-akbar, the greater jihad, refers to the inner spiritual struggle against one's own ego, desires, and moral failings. This is rooted in a famous hadith in which the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, returned from battle and said, "We have returned from the lesser jihad to the greater jihad, the struggle against the self." Sufi scholars in particular emphasize this dimension, seeing the purification of the nafs, the self, as the true heart of Islamic practice. Al-jihad al-asghar, the lesser jihad, refers to external struggle, which can include armed defense of the Muslim community. But even here, Islamic jurisprudence sets strict conditions. It must be a last resort, proportionate, declared by legitimate authority, and non-combatants must be protected. Surah 2, verse 190 states, "Fight in the cause of Allah those who fight you, but do not transgress limits." Now, contemporary scholars like Tariq Ramadan, and do memorize his name, he comes up constantly, argue that jihad in the modern context is primarily social and civic. For Ramadan, the struggle is about working for justice, combating poverty, and engaging constructively with Western democratic institutions. He rejects the idea that Muslims in Europe are living in Dar al-Harb, the classical abode of war, and instead proposes the concept of Dar al-Amn, the abode of safety, where Muslims can fulfill their religious obligations freely and should therefore be active, loyal citizens. This brings us beautifully to our second major theme, Sharia and secular democracy. Sharia is often misrepresented in public discourse as simply a harsh legal code. In reality, it is a comprehensive ethical and spiritual framework derived from the Quran and Sunnah. The word itself means the path to the watering hole, a path towards flourishing and justice. The question of whether Sharia is compatible with Western secular democracy is a classic AO2 question. Here's how to structure your thinking. Traditionalist scholars like Sayyid Hossein Nasser argue that the sacred law cannot be separated from its divine source. To apply Sharia piecemeal or to reinterpret it through secular frameworks is to fundamentally distort it. Nasser writes that modernity represents a spiritual crisis and that Islam must offer an alternative, not accommodate itself to secular values. On the other side, Tariq Ramadan argues in his book, Western Muslims and the Future of Islam, that Muslims can and should engage fully with democratic processes. He distinguishes between the unchanging principles of Sharia, justice, mercy, human dignity, and the specific rulings that were always contextually determined and can be reinterpreted. This is the concept of ijtihad, independent scholarly reasoning to derive new rulings for new circumstances. Now let's turn to gender, which is another high-frequency exam topic. The key Quranic verse here is Surah 4, verse 34, which describes men as kawamun over women, a word variously translated as protectors, maintainers, or guardians. Traditional interpretations have used this verse to justify male authority in the family. However, feminist scholars challenge this reading fundamentally. Amina Wadud, in her landmark 1992 work Quran and Woman, argues that the verse must be read in its historical context. She contends that Kawamun referred to a specific economic arrangement in 7th century Arabia, not a universal theological principle. Wadud advocates for a gender-equal hermeneutics, a method of reading the Quran that centers justice and human dignity for all people, regardless of gender. A critical point for your exam. Examiners will credit candidates who distinguish between cultural patriarchy and genuine theological precepts. For example, the practice of dowry in some South Asian Muslim communities is a cultural tradition, not an Islamic requirement. The Islamic institution of mahr, the gift given by a husband to his wife at marriage, is actually a financial protection for women, not a payment for marriage. Conflating these is a common mistake that will cost you marks. The debate also extends to female leadership. In 1994, Amina Wadud led mixed-gender Friday prayers in South Africa, an act that provoked enormous controversy. Traditionalists cite hadith literature restricting women from leading men in prayer. Progressives argue that the Prophet himself appointed women to positions of authority, including Imuraka, whom he reportedly appointed to lead her household in prayer. Finally, let's address religious pluralism and secularization. Surah 2, verse 256 states, "There is no compulsion in religion." This is one of the most frequently cited verses in discussions of pluralism and religious freedom. Classical scholars interpreted this narrowly as applying to non-Muslims living under Islamic governance who should not be forced to convert. Contemporary scholars like Ramadan interpret it more broadly as a foundational principle of religious liberty. The challenge of secularization, the declining influence of religion in public life, is framed differently by different Muslim thinkers. Nasser sees secularization as a catastrophic loss of the sacred, a symptom of modernity's spiritual bankruptcy. He argues that Islamic civilization offers a holistic alternative in which the sacred permeates all aspects of life. Ramadan, by contrast, sees secularism not as an enemy, but as a framework within which Muslims can practice and advocate for their values in the public square.
Right, let's talk about how to actually get the marks.
First, the most important thing. This paper is 60% AO2. That means your job is not to describe Islamic beliefs, it's to evaluate them. Every paragraph should contain a however, a by contrast, or a this challenges the view that. If you're writing three paragraphs that all agree with the same position, you're not doing AO2. Second, use scholars by name and with precision. Don't just say some Muslims believe. Say, Tariq Ramadan argues in Western Muslims and the Future of Islam that, or Amina Wadud's gender equal hermeneutics, developed in Quran and Woman in 1992, challenges the traditional reading of Surah 434. Examiners are explicitly instructed to credit accurate citation of Quranic verses and scholarly sources. Third, avoid the monolith mistake. Islam is not one thing. Sunni, Shia, and Sufi traditions have distinct approaches to authority, jurisprudence, and spirituality. These distinctions matter for exam questions about authority and interpretation. Fourth, for 15-mark questions, your conclusion must do more than summarize. It must reach a judgment that follows logically from your evaluation. Ask yourself, given everything I've argued, what is the most defensible position? Then state it clearly and explain why. Fifth, watch your timing. For 10-mark examine questions, allocate 12 to 15 minutes. For 15-mark evaluate questions, allocate 20 to 25 minutes. Okay, quiz time. I'll ask the question, pause, then give you the answer. Question 1. What does the word jihad literally mean? It means struggle or striving. Question 2. Which scholar proposed the concept of Dar al-Am for Western democracies? Tariq Ramadan. Question 3. What is the title of Amina Wadud's 1992 book, Quran and Woman? Question 4. What does Surah 2, verse 256 state? There is no compulsion in religion. Question 5. What is the difference between mahr and dowry? Mahr is the Islamic gift from husband to wife, a financial protection. Dowry is a South Asian cultural practice, not an Islamic requirement. Question 6. What does ijtihad mean? Independent scholarly reasoning to derive new legal rulings. Let's bring it all together. Islam and society is a topic about tension and dialogue between tradition and modernity, between classical scholarship and contemporary reinterpretation, between universal principles and contextual application. The three scholars you absolutely must know are Tariq Ramadan, the reformist who argues for engaged European Muslim citizenship, Sayyid Hossein Nasser, the traditionalist who defends the sacred law against secular encroachment, and Amina Wadud, the progressive feminist theologian who reads the Quran through a lens of gender justice. The key Quranic verses are Surah 434 on gender, Surah 2256 on religious freedom, and Surah 2-190 on the conditions of armed struggle. And the key conceptual distinctions are greater versus lesser jihad, Dar al-Harb versus Dar al-Am, cultural practice versus theological precept, and description versus evaluation. You've got this. Go back over your notes, Practice those AO2 arguments, and remember, the examiner wants to see you think, not just recall. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.